to take an intro.
Hey, how you doing, honey? How you doing today?
Good, good.
How was the kids? How about this one? You like this one?
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty.
That's pretty right there. I like the blue balls.
Blue Balls Pod.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Blue Balls. Season 10.
The blue ball. The blue balls.
Season 10. 10.
Like a pocket full of jelly beans with a broken pen, ladies and gentlemen, you've got blue balls. My name is Jake Beckard, and I am your intrepid cohort, and I am joined this week, as every week, by my intrepid cohort, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, how are you this first week of April?
Oh, what are we doing this time, Jake?
I guess it's not. It's actually the second week of April.
Eclipse, earthquake, what do you want?
Did you do the eclipse?
Did I do the eclipse? My big dumper backed up in front of the sun? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Did you throw those hams? Did you throw that big ham in front of the sun to give us all a show? You shouldn't look directly at Trey's hams. It can hurt your eyes.
Frankly. Of course, I was responsible and got my glasses from the public library.
Impressive.
Thanks to our great functioning government and public resources. And no one else at my job did, so I had to fucking pass that around like it was like I was the only guy that had weed in college or whatever.
That's tragic. I'm so sorry. That was me. Yeah, I was one of those people.
I knew you would be.
I was traveling. I was with a friend towards the beginning, like around 2:30. Who gives a shit? But then I was walking, so I looked at it for a second, and then I was walking somewhere else, and I kept passing people coming out and, like, you know, having their glasses and looking at it. And every single person on West 4th Street, I looked at them like, could I get this person to let me just look for a second, like to borrow a stranger's glasses and be like, can I check it out, please? Can I look, please?
You only need it for a second.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, I was checking in, but.
But it's the time.
It was weird how it got colder and darker. Spooky.
See, I wasn't.
That's it.
I then went inside and I was gone for like when it got big. Yeah, around 3:30, I was fast asleep and I had a great nap. And I have to credit the eclipse with that. The cosmic energy provided something that I almost never get anymore, which is a really good nap.
Sweet. Glad to hear it. I wish I had one.
Are you a napper? Are you a napper? I don't know this about you.
No, I'm not.
Yeah.
Maybe post brunch, but that's it.
Sure. Yeah, sure. If you'd back in the day, if you needed to do a little rally, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now I do want to ask you about the earthquake, too. I know that, you know, all of this is customary, and we don't have to spend too much time on it, I promise. But did you feel it at all?
Great. Funny story. No. I did not feel the first one. I did not feel the aftershock. I did not feel it. I don't know why.
I did not feel it.
I thought it was my neighbor
Sam,
doing their washing machine because they're loud as fuck.
Mm.
So was no difference to me. And then I heard a bunch of dogs barking, and I was like, what the fuck is happening? And then got the wave of text, as everyone did.
Yeah, that was funny. From friends and loved ones. I had a tweet do some numbers because my wife felt the shake, and we were like, oh, was that an earthquake? And she was like, weird, cool. And then she spent the next 45 minutes being like, why is everyone being so annoying?
Oh, because she's Los Angeles.
Yeah, she's jaded. She's a jaded old crone, my wife. Take her,
now,
please.
The earthquake was because of my fat dumper.
Yeah, it was like, that's why you didn't feel it, and it's because you were.
Yeah,
it was just normal toilet time for you.
I was doing a Megan Thee Stallion.
Okay, great, it's done. We've talked about New York. Now let's talk about New York City FC. 1-1 draw against Atlanta. This is a fun one, I think, to talk about from a media perspective. As much as it is, I mean, it's not that fun to talk about in general, but I think it's funny that you can basically go to any outlet you like and either we should have won or we should have lost or we should have drawn, you know? Like, there are so many, it's sort of Schrodinger's match in terms of possibilities. There are so many different ways to read what happened on the pitch. I think the feeling, of course, I think, is with so few shots on target that this was a hopeless, and not a hopeless endeavor, but that a win is too much to expect, and yet the expected goals, of course, tell a different story, and the feeling of having gone down to a draw after taking the lead with the Santi PK, that feels like an entirely different emotional journey. I mean, in the cold light of day, what's your read on this match in terms of whether we deserved, how many points we deserved to come away with it with?
Weird. Kind of in that weird middle ground, edging, whatever. Gooning.
Gooning, edging, yeah. Are you edging or are you gooning?
Kind of match. You mentioned all the shots. It sucks that this team does seem like, over the last 3 weeks, maybe thanks to, like, facing some good opposition and, like, rising to the moment, etc., is, like, improving a little bit, like, in multiple different ways. This one maybe even felt like the most dynamic attacking performance we've had in a long while. I mean, 23 shots. That means you're getting the ball. You're getting the ball in the final third, and you're taking chances. And that's, like, at a high volume. That's obviously a positive and something we have to ask for from this team that we haven't had. And it's been improving, right? Like, the last three or so matches have been much better than the first few. That goes without saying. Of course, the issues are allowing big chances to the other team. And more importantly, the question of the fucking season thus far is the finishing. It wasn't there. And it's 23 shots. And, like, Bakar did not take all 23 of them. It was... I think that's probably getting missed in this conversation. Obviously, it all falls on Bakar, and you can tell it's, like, weighing on him. And it's pretty important that your striker scores a goal with the amount of shots he's taking in seven games, and that hasn't happened. All of that, I'm not dismissing any of that, but some real howlers as well from Santi and from Julian and from Hannes and from everyone and from Keaton. I mean, everyone was missing, and it's not good enough.
Can we talk about that for a bit? Okay. As you know, one of us played soccer. One of us plays soccer when he has the chance to, and it's not me. I wonder if you can talk about the psychology of finishing woes, and specifically finishing woes where you just see hoofing and hoofing and hoofing and hoofing. It feels, right, armchair analyst style, like we're talking about, like it's a sign of desperation. It's something that is happening because there is this pressure to produce, this sense of the drought of good shots or of serious goals or whatever, right? And so there's just like a little holding on to oh too long. Repeatedly and across the board, of course, Bakrar is front and center with it because his are the most visible, and because the team as it's arranged right now puts a lot of its hopes in terms of striking ability on Bakrar. But you're right, it's across the board. What is it that what in your experience, in your peers at the front of the squad, do you see when you see nothing but shots that fly over the net?
I don't personally have that experience. Like, I don't know what it's like to be a striker that hasn't scored in seven games or anything like that. I mean, obviously, like in soccer or any sport, like losses that pile up or a team where you're taking shot after shot and you desperately need one and they can't go in, I certainly know that feeling. And like, it's hard to say exactly. I mean, we kind of touched on this last week, but it's almost like there needs to be some kind of reset, some kind of either mental reset throughout the week or during practice, or some kind of change of like a shock to the system, like a benching or a change of formation or personnel or anything, some kind of like clearing, some kind of reassociation of the act of playing in a stadium as opposed to practice. I mean it's, everything's on the board and it's hard to say. I'll say from the player's perspective, like, there's certainly, we're in the weird place, and it might be positive, I can't tell, where they're getting more and more, frankly, pissed off and frustrated, like, even more so than any other time. But at the same time, they're aware that, like, they're improving. Like, they're in a different place now. previously they were like four or five games in and not scoring, and everyone was pissed and we were losing. Now we're doing okay against very good teams and creating even more chances and good quality and good style of soccer, and they're still not going in. And so there's this level that I'm sensing with the players. Obviously, there's a frustration at the results, but even more so, they're almost through the looking glass where there's a level of like of irony, of throwing your hands up to the gods, of almost humor, right? Like, what more can you do? Where, like, it seems it's almost like a curse where they're laughing and you know, James Sands was probably the most demonstrative of this. He was joking. I can't remember specifically who, Juan Carlos or this guy John, they were talking and they were like, mentally, how does this team go through this, like, these negative times? And James Sands like, well, hey man, we had a lot of practice last year. Like, like sucking at the end of the year, so or sucking throughout the year, so they're aware of that. And then I was talking to James after, and I was like, hey man, like, just want to say you've really been like bringing it, the intensity defensively the last few games, like, it's awesome to see, and it's good to see you back like at that level again. And he's like, yeah man, it's a long season, you know, 27 games baby, 27. And he's walking away from me just saying over and over again, 27 games, 27 games. like almost like I'm sad I have to go through this for 27 more games, but also, but more like they know the exact number, like, hey, we gotta do this. Like,
yeah, they've got their goofy little calendar where they're marking out each day, drawing a big big red X on the date, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, so sorry, I'm kind of like half answering you because I don't feel either qualified nor that I necessarily have a unique point of view where it comes to like what's going through their heads, and especially Bakrar's, because that's only there to them. But clearly it's something, and that's what's the most frustrating, right? It's frustrating to see Bakrar do, I mean, we keep saying he's doing everything right. I mean, the end of the, if you watch one highlight from this game, it's the end of the first half where there's this chance where Santi tries to get it to the feet of Bakrar, fucks it up, but then he fights, he gets the loose ball by the defender, he fucking beats them down, pushes them aside, gets through them, runs forward, and then misses wide left by a foot. And it's like, it's a perfect example of him getting in a good position, getting the ball. Yeah, he lost it, but he fought back and got it and had the breakaway speed to beat his man. And it's like the perfect kind of what you need from a striker, like create something out of nothing. The high press was working so well in this game for multiple times, created lots of opportunities for us. One of the reasons why the shots were so high, and Bakrar is a big reason for that, but it just doesn't fucking go in. And I don't know what to say. I don't, like, what do we do? What? How can we diagnose it when we know we've seen him score goals before? We've seen him. We know what he can do outside of scoring goals. So, like, when do we cross? And it's like, you know, you think like, oh, once he gets one in, he's gonna get a ton. Like, that's classic sports psychology thinking. Of course, it's like once you break the seal, it's gonna go. He's gonna go on a run. And like Tati, I mean, it was mentioned many times. Like Tati also had cold streaks and things like that, but it's dismal to like kind of experience and watch, and those expectations, especially after this last game, are just going to be even heavier. They just multiply. So I'm wondering, what do you think is going on? You're a cerebral or an emotionally intelligent person. What do you think?
Oh gosh, I think that you've covered it just about as well as it could be covered. You know, I don't know that there's anything more complicated or special than that.
Well, here's a question for you. Sorry.
Classic sports psychology, as you put it. Go ahead.
We both kind of advocated or leaned towards like, yeah, you have to start Bakrar after the Miami match because we saw a lot of good things and we know the underlying numbers, etc. Does your answer change after this match?
No, I don't know.
I mean, he hasn't scored.
A little bit. A little bit. It does. A little bit. If I was at practice, I feel like I'd have a different opinion. It does, actually. But that's an emotional reaction. It's an emotional change on my part, I think.
I would...
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was about to say, I would start to lean yes, if only because we saw what it did to Tavon Gray.
Right.
Look at Tavon in this game. Just like, we saw almost a brand new Tavon. I mean, he looks so much more of a complete player in this match, and unfazed and involved in the offense and the defense equally well. And it was great to see him, you know, really put himself back in this lineup. And more specifically, like, I know that a lot of it has to do with that Kevin O'Toole had to deal with Brooks Lennon, who's one of the best right backs in the league for a majority of the match. But even so, I think this might be one of the first games Tavon had an average field position further upfield than Kevin O'Toole. I mean, we completely flipped our whole system on its head,
mm-hmm.
just out of the necessity of the game, but also due to Tavon's, you know, good shift, I'll say.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that the reason that I'm tilting is because the pattern is so deeply set that it's possible that that kind of... I feel like at this point, the investment in Bekrar is so clear, including to Bekrar himself, that like getting benched, yes, will feel like failure, of course, but will also maybe like be an interruption of the flow enough to say, okay, we're not doing this anymore, right? Stand off, stand down. Show me something that gets you this slot back. You know, it's a shakeup, and it can be done as a shakeup rather than as like, I don't know, punitive action or something like that. And if happen, if that can be the case, then sure.
That's great.
That makes a ton of sense to me. And I do feel like we're craving it, you know? Whether it's good coaching or not, it's just such a... I think about this all the time, genuinely. Because, I mean, even right now, I'm working on this show, and I have a couple actors who are really struggling to deliver, and it's not because they're not good. I mean, it's crazy that like the comparison, but it's true. They're in their heads and they can't shake, and the lines get fucked up, and they can't shake the feeling that they're shitting the bed, and so they stop paying attention to each other in like really clutch scenes, and they're not like right placing their attention where it's supposed to be, and they have everything that they need, and it's just that in the clutch moments, I guess pressure, but also just the sort of like black hole of your self-awareness swallows you up. And mm-hmm. I don't know how to create a come to Jesus moment around that, right? Like, do better is not the solution. And you can sort of, mm-hmm. you can do little drills here and there, but you kind of need space to have a breakthrough. You kind of need space to just like, you need to kind of give up on a certain level. You need the chance to give up. You need the chance to give up and refract. Because you push yourself to sort of burn out the desire to succeed for so long. And sometimes that breaks down the wall, but it is the responsibility of a good coach or a good director to know when that's running out. And to say, like, I'm actually not going to say fucking anything to this person for a little while. And for these two actors, what I told them was, like, I think you should probably work on this scene without me. You know, they're student actors, so they can do that. And like, just relieve yourself of the need to, like, get it right on a couple runs. Have that space and time to like recontextualize. I don't know how you do that if you're Munsaf Bekrar.
Yeah, no.
You know,
he can't practice a game situation not, you know, without 20,000 people watching.
Yeah, exactly. But that's kind of what benching does. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is like all of a sudden you're playing the mental game of like, what would I be doing on the pitch right now? You can maybe see it better in somebody else. Or if other people are fucking up, maybe you can see it in them and correct it in yourself, because that's a really useful strategy too. I don't know. I've never coached sports, and I don't know that the skills are transferable. But if I was, I'd probably try to make them. Let me ask. Let's pivot. Talk from our side's woes to their side's adjustments. I'm curious as to whether or not you felt like this Atlanta side looked like the Atlanta side that we expected, or played like an Atlanta side despite like that we've seen this season, despite missing so many of their starters.
Yeah, I think it was almost exactly what I expected. An Atlanta team without Jakob Mäkisen, right? Like they're not going to be their best selves, because as of this point right now, I think I saw an Atlanta fan point this out, to be honest, is 19% of away teams like get a win or get points on the road or something. I mean, it's or get a win on the road. It's low. So this is just a league where home and away matters. And notwithstanding, like, they still had on the field, in my opinion, last year's MVP, and they also had some very talented players around them. Just they didn't have that focal point to like nail the shots on target, and Almada seemed to like, you know, have to heave from long range a few times and or work a little extra hard to get some chances, and I think we saw that. I think we're two somewhat similar teams stylistically, how we set up, our shape, our distances, our spacing, our pace, building from the back. There's a lot of similarities, and I was impressed by, I'm impressed, but it became somewhat of a chess match, and perhaps why NYCFC should walk away with their heads up a little bit is that, you know, NYCFC did this thing, and they always do this at Citi Field, I've noticed, and we've talked about it before. It's like this idea of like setting up wide on a small field because, you know, the other team will always set up wide because they're used to a bigger field. But also it allows us to build through our strengths in the midfield. And like, you notice who else had good games or who were useful in this match, I would say, is James Sands, Keaton Parks, and Santi Rodriguez. Why is that? Because on a lot of set piece play or goal kicks or building out from the back, we love to hug the touch lines on the sidelines. And it creates spaces not only horizontally, which were the most obvious, but also in between the lines vertically, where Santi did a lot of good work. And this was probably the most obvious of any match this season that Sands and Keaton Parks found their vertical spacing moment to moment the most accurate, the most efficiently. And I think all that combined worked really well for us. On the flip side, also works really well for Atlanta, unfortunately, because they had Muyumba, I think is his name. Wow, I'll feel really bad if I got that wrong. He had 13 tackles. I mean, obviously, Santi had like such a high usage rate in this match, and like so their you know, bruiser defensive midfielder is going to have a high volume of tackles, but he really put in a good shift defensively outside of yanking Santi down in the penalty box. And you combine his ability to at least slow us down with Thiago Almada, who like just lives, he just feasts if you give him any space in the middle of the field. And we did, because again, we wanted to set up wide to create more space for ourselves. And what you get is this match that we saw, which was extremely back and forth, you know, over 30 shots and a lot of good chances for both teams. So I think it was the kind of match where like you just had to hope your team could play a more efficient offense. And unfortunately, you know, for Atlanta in the first half, that was not the case for them. And for us in at least the first half of the second half, the first part of the second half, I should say, was not the case for us. So,
would it be fair to say that like one of the things that distinguishes the difference between our styles of play is that Atlanta also has a pretty savvy counterattack, which that feels like the thing that we struggled with the most. And it made me think a lot about the fractured nature of the defense right now, which is still in its sort of like build back better phase. Yeah.
Yeah. I think as we've pointed out and is unfortunately becoming more and more emphasized as our woes continue, is how much Nick Cushing's system has somewhat moved into more risk-reward. I mentioned how much Sands and Keaton were like involved in play and things like that, but at the same that you sacrifice. You have to depend on your center backs to take 0 minutes off, right? Like, it's risk reward because, I mean, it's a perfectly, you can set up that way if you want, but you have to be aware of a team that's good at counterattacking. And you're right, Atlanta is. Like, just like Lojanice and Lennon and Almada running up just one side of the field, you're screwed. And luckily, you know, Freeze obviously again had a fantastic game, and that helped. But I think Risa and Martin's, you know, first game at City Field, Reese has been out for a few games. That chemistry just obviously was not 100%. And so if you're running a risk-reward style where James Sands is not dropping between the center backs often, and where the lines are not compact, and we're relying on dribbling, because that's not what, you know, our dribbling is, all the numbers and underlying numbers are both trash. I think they were better in this game regardless. It's not a recipe for success if you're going to try to take a little more space vertically and surrender some defensive compactness. You have to have those two guys be stellar, and they weren't for 90 minutes. They were for a lot of the minutes, but not for 90, which with Risa, I expect with Martin's, like, we haven't labeled a Katy Perry of the season yet. Just to give how long this podcast has been going on, that we awarded that back when that song first came out.
Oh, Jesus. Is that true? That can't be true.
No, it was like 2 years after it came out, maybe. When you're hot and you're cold, you're yes and you're no. I would say Santi might be the Katy Perry, but unfortunately, like,
but there's so many Katy Perry. You could honestly argue that the entire team, it's a team of Katy Perrys this season, and it's not except for that. They're never all hot at the same time, so it doesn't feel like the whole team can be awarded the assignation.
Sure. So you're right. The counterattacks, you have, like, I hope they learn from that and they'll watch the tape of, like, obviously it was just embarrassing that Guzan, we just didn't get back in time. I mean, that's the problem, right? Again, you're pushing up high because of how many shots we had, how much possession we had, how many offensive runs of play we were going through. We just didn't get back in time. We fell asleep at the wheel in that one moment, and that's all it can take. Like, which wouldn't be a problem if we converted any of our chances. Mm-hmm. Like, at least one more of the 20 that we had.
Do you think, I mean, it feels like it's only going to get worse from here on out, right? Like, the more that we tilt towards that strategy, the more teams are going to be watching the tapes and looking to exploit that in the way that they, right? They'll take the gamble that we are offering because it ends so often in their favor, right? I mean, like, until truly, literally, until we start scoring goals, we're gonna see people bid for that and bid for high scoring games and expect that those high scoring games are at least gonna secure them a point, if not three, because we can't match that pace of goal scoring. I mean, is that fair? Or did you see stuff that felt exploitable?
Fair. It's extremely fair. I think it's, frankly, I think it's a gamble worth taking. Because
it is more fun to watch, at least for me. You know what I mean? Like, thinking about,
well, certainly
earlier versions of this team. If you're going to be a losing team, at least not like not being a boring losing team is nice, is helpful. Not being a team that's, you know, constantly
backpassing. But you just have to hope that you have to be more confident in your ability of Bakrar scoring than your ability of your center backs having bad days. And like, the math should work there, but it hasn't. That's mm-hmm. the problem.
Yeah.
But it's not like we're going to face Carlos Heel or someone like that next week or something. Not like we have to worry about it.
No, certainly not. More on that later, I suppose. Is it worth pausing to talk about Matt Freese? Is it worth when it's really just the same sort of ballyhoo that we've done week after week this season?
Yeah, I don't think it's worth pausing. I just thought one of my favorite moments of the match was where he did mess up a pass across the face of goal, which I'm always terrified of as a player, but professionals are not. They're not, like, at that level, it's not usually a problem, but he just lost track of it. It happened to Sean John, like, once a year, so it's not something to be, or twice a year. It's not something to be overtly concerned about. It's just funny that, it's kind of an example where, like, the ball went right through him and he freaked out, and then somehow the ball bounced and then he accidentally threw out the ball jumbling through his extremities. He kicked it towards our goal, open goal, and managed to accidentally save his own shot on us. I thought that was, I was like, Freeze can even save his own shots. Like, it was very impressive. So,
it's a little bit of a show off. It's a little pick me energy for me.
Pick me. Pick me, Freeze. He might be a pick me goalkeeper with like the incredible saves he's making. How great his he looks. He's certainly like talent wise and on tape like one of the best keepers in the league right now, but also does not have a clean sheet. It's like very, very pick me. it's not his fault. I'm not blaming him.
No, of course not. You, of course, no. We're a Matt Freeze podcast.
It's all we're blessed. Everybody we're blessed.
He's the exactly the shining. Oh my God! Can you imagine? Can you imagine if there wasn't that degree of consistency between the posts for this team this season?
Barraza started last year pretty well, but not this well, no.
It'd be a different emotional space, I think, that we'd be occupying, sure. Is all I'm truly saying.
Certainly.
Anything else here? Anybody that hasn't gotten celebrated that ought to be celebrated? I was going to take this sort of Tavon sidebar, but we've already done it.
I would say Alonso Martinez, I was a little surprised, but not entirely, that he started, you know, awarded for the goal, and Julian has not been great. But Alonso was, like, not necessarily, you know, exciting. A little boring. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, but how does that make him different than any of the other sort of, like, any of the people that we spoke so starry-eyed about at the beginning of this, in the season preview, who are much more recent acquisitions and for whom we had higher hopes?
Yeah, I would just say in one sentence, Alonso Martinez and Julian Fernandez are having the most surprisingly boring roster competition right now, spot competition. like they're both are just not playing extremely fluid or error-free football, and we have to watch both of them compete with each other, and like hopefully one of them will break out of their slump. On the other side, Hannes Wolf, that is the Katy Perry, and it's like he's Katy Perry within games. I still want... We can have a further Hannes Wolf discussion next week. I want to kind of gather my thoughts and watch him more closely next week.
Yeah, that makes some sense to me.
Well, then that's it, right?
I think so. I feel like then it's just, it's only the talking points.
Damn, that was 30 minutes? I felt like we said nothing.
I know, but I kind of feel that way. I kind of feel that way every week.
I felt like I just did filler.
No, it's good. It's, it's just what's on the label, baby. We're just covering. This is a news journalism outpost, and we are reporting the news to you. We know you just need something for your cat to listen to while you're out of the house. We're not worried about it. Talking points.
Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points.
Those were the Talking Points theme songs, and this is the Talking Point. I'm not doing it again. I would say the main talking point that I want to cover here, and that I think everybody's already chewing on, Trey, you've already weighed in on this on our official Twitter, but Mijatovic is stuck in Serbia. That piece of horror grindcore, a Serbian film, has it been such a misery for so many New Yorkers to have someone stuck in Serbia. Did you see that a Serbian film? Did you see that movie, Trey?
Nope.
It's just really fucked and gruesome. It's just horrible things.
Is that the pogrom one that's like awful and horrifying?
Yes, I think so. I'm not sure. Okay. I
read it.
Somebody gives birth and then they.
Yep.
You know, I feel like you were artfully dodging that information, but it feels like really crucial. Salo? No, not Salo. I don't think they.
Okay.
Salo. I think this movie was trying to give Salo or 100 Days of Sodom a run for its money. I haven't actually seen either of them, and I have, frankly, no interest.
This is bumming me out. Yep.
It, almost as much as having Jovan stuck in Serbia, my friend. Lots of rumors flying about. Does he not want to be on the team? Is it a problem with his visa, or is there something morale even more so? Does he know that we suck and he doesn't want to be tainted by us? There's a lot of anxious looking at the phone, triple texting, worried would-be girlfriend kind of energy coming from the fan base. Do you think any of it's warranted?
No. I would say wait and see, right? Like, Hudson River Blue, well, first, backing up, asked around, poked around, didn't get anything, which somewhat is worrying. But then Hudson River Blue, you know, day of the match, they heard that it was a visa issue. And I'm not sure entirely.
A lower body visa issue.
Yeah. Scoreboard was having a time that day, I promise. And I'm not entirely sure, yeah, again, where they got it. That might have been from team sources or a party line kind of thing. I'm not sure. Because I know that later became a response from the team when asked directly about it, that it was visa issues. And I don't think there's anything malicious going on. Obviously, it's out of the ordinary that a player would leave and then not be able to come back due to visa issues.
Wasn't your argument that it was Easter and the embassies closed?
That's not my argument, that, sir, is that I did do my own due diligence and talk to someone that knows him very well, is friends with him, and they said, you know, that, no, it is a visa issue. It's that he was having trouble coming back. I did not get into the specifics of it because the person I was speaking to is not an immigration specialist. But they said he had a visa issue and that he was having trouble coming back because this visa issue happened right before there was Easter and holidays and public holidays in Serbia. So they closed all the government buildings and he was having trouble with that. And then someone said to, you know, on Twitter to us, one of our brilliant reply people, and I don't mean that sarcastically, mentioned that like Orthodox Easter is not until May. I was like, this is what I was told, my guy. Like I, which again, that's a valid point and perhaps is interesting, but I trust the person I was talking to that this is the reality. Now, we still don't have the specifics. We have no idea when it's going to get resolved. And I was talking to my wife, who is an expert on all things immigration and all these things. And she said likely one of three things happened. Well, she said a lot, but I condensed it into kind of three points. Is either there was some kind of paperwork mess up, right? This is the first time he's left America and came back under his current visa. So if there was a paperwork issue, like the wrong kind of visa was filed, or they told CBP when he left or came back a different kind of visa that he wasn't on, which would not be a paperwork issue, but you know, it's hard to assign blame to anyone. Who knows who would have made a mistake. It's either that, it's either, in the words of my wife, CBP can do whatever the fuck they want. Which is, if they just take some umbrage to any of the stamps on your visa or the words on your visa or anything, they can just say no. You know, it's like immigration is not a cut and dry kind of situation. And the third possibility is like maybe he just lost his passport, which would have his visa inside of it. And which can, or it was stolen or something like that, which we don't know. Again, this is speculation, but is like one of the three more common things that could have happened. And that would take time. And then if the buildings were closed and he had a delay due to holidays, that would be more so. And the person I was speaking to that he's friends with also mentioned that like it's harder for Serbians because like a lot of Serbians come to America. Like it's not a smaller country in Eastern Europe. This is a pretty big one. So the processing times just take longer for things like this. So it's probably one of those three things. I don't know if anyone's to blame here. I think it's just unfortunate. The person I spoke to also mentioned like he's pissed. He's mad. He wants to. This kid, this kind of killer instinct 18-year-old striker.
Yeah.
Does not want to not be playing soccer.
Yeah, I genuinely think that that's the most compelling, like counter to the conspiracy is just like it gains him nothing not to be on the pitch.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I was taking a big sip. He desperately wants to be back. I mean, imagine if you're him and you're watching the person you're trying to beat fucking hoof sitters for seven straight games. Mm-hmm. You're like, I want to be back in practice, dog. I want that spot. And that's frankly what I was told is like, no, he wants to be here. He wants to get playing time. He wants to earn that spot. And he wants to start scoring some fucking goals because that's what he does. That's what he eats for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And obviously we haven't seen him that often. And in the times he's come on the field, it hasn't looked great, but he's 18. New players take time to integrate, and time is what we need. And this is just a huge, like, it couldn't come at a worse time, right?
Yeah.
We're talking about time. I sound very much like, Henry IV right now.
That's for somebody.
Who's the one that sat on the hill?
Me, I don't do any. I don't do any.
No, who's
I don't
the
do
one
the
that
histories.
Carved the? It's. It might be. Who cares? Literally, who cares?
Honestly, we've carved out our niche. We've admitted to it at this point.
He's time. This is the time. Time is the word of the season, and he just we need this. Could not have happened at a worse time, is what I'm saying. Obviously, that goes without saying, but it sucks that this is happening, and hopefully it gets resolved soon. There's nothing, as far as I know right now, malicious or a huge mistake on any party involved, as far as we know, and I'm not going to be one to ascribe blame in any direction, because that would be presumptuous. And we just have to wait and hope it gets resolved this week. And if not this week, then next week. And if not, the week after. Like,
what
that's fun. It. Waiting game.
What a fun game for us to be playing.
Yeah, it sucks.
Well, shall we talk about another fun game? Which is to say, in inside baseball, in the fan news media sphere.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah, please, get it out. We got to put it somewhere. Just
cut me off at any point when you feel like I've gone beyond over my skis. I'm just going to address this very quickly. And I'm going to try not to sound like an asshole or unboring or anything. It just literally has to be addressed. Is the director of communications for Atlanta United sent a tweet out at the very end of the first half of the match. I'm not going to quote it directly because I don't feel like looking at it. But it was to the generally, the press box at, and then he tagged New York City FC, has been clapping at every corner kick. I've never seen a more unprofessional press box since I covered high school football in Texas. I believe that's like almost word for word, right? Obviously, like, okay. So this is what happened. This man did not speak to anyone at the facility. No journalist and no
it has to
staff
be said
members.
Right from go. I mean, this man sounds like a bitch and a narc. And I'll say that as somebody
I'm not saying that
who wasn't there.
That's you.
Who was there. Yeah. No, that's me. That's me for, you know, just reporting my experience remotely. you know.
Sure.
I would never
sure.
put those
and
words
my
in the
true
mouth
feelings.
Of anybody who's there.
I'll give my true feelings in a second. I just want to be able to isolate it so I can bleep out certain words. But no, I'll say this. Look, he sent that tweet. He did not speak to any journalist, like say, hey, do you mind keeping it down? Whatever. Hey, or to any New York City staff member. He didn't say, hey, do you mind telling your journalist to keep it down or whatever? He just sent the tweet out. And secondly, it is flatly untrue. There is not one moment where any NYCFC reporter clapped at any corner kick throughout the entirety of the match. There was one journalist sitting to the right of me, an older gentleman, Spanish language reporter. I do not know him. He clapped twice, and that's it. And of course, yeah, it was a little unprofessional, but it didn't go over the border of anything. We're all very passionate fans because there's no one but fan media that can cover this team because no one cares about MLS in this country. So we do a lot of like, and ooh, and ah, ooh, ee, ooh, oh, ooh. Like, that's it. That's the extent of what goes on in the press box, right? This is the first time since
2017. And that's just at halftime.
That's me getting those French fries, baby. This is the first time since 2017, which is the only other time Another staff member has sent a tweet out without talking to us about our behavior in the press box. 2017, 7 years without incident, by the way. And that time was Red Bull's, and I will say, well-deserved. We were completely unprofessional in that situation. And, you know, in retrospect, I can take that. This is not the case. This press box was nowhere near that level of unprofessionalism. I think what this man saw was a complete fabrication. He just lived in a different reality than mine. Now, what I did, I don't consider myself a director of communications. I have not been hired to be one. I know it comes probably with a nice salary. But, you know, I feel like if you're a director of communications, the importance of communicating what you need to say is important, and that was not done. So I did, me lowly, you know, amateur, I found this guy, and I had a conversation with him. Very professional. I did not get emotional. Of course not. I was not going to, because I wanted to reflect that our journalism base in NYCFC is not only one of the most populated compared to other fan bases, but also the most passionate, intelligent, and professional that I've been around and seen in my 10 years of covering this team. And I only mentioned 10 years because he decided to pull the 12 years card while we were speaking, which I just found interesting. You know, my conversation with him went nowhere. We just had different realities. He seemed to be confused, in my opinion, that the Atlanta fan base was seated directly in front of the press box. And I mean, spitting distance. So perhaps he was hearing some of their reactions. At the end of the first half, I had the window open because I enjoy having the window open at Citi Field to hear the sounds, or else it sounds really weird to be there. And I closed it at halftime and everyone was clapping. Perhaps he was confused, you know, ironically, and perhaps he confused that. I'm not sure. I'm not in this man's brain. And frankly, we obviously like see things completely differently. I will say I am surprised that a director of communications who has his master's degree of communications in his Twitter bio would decide to tweet before speaking to anyone directly, either the journalists themselves or the team staff. You know, I would read it as a tweet like that is only to get attention. It's certainly not to solve the problem, right? It's to narc. It's to get someone in trouble. And the fact that all the journalists there, you know, if we lose our credentials, we're fucked. I mean, not me personally. I don't give a fuck. But if there's a lot of people there who write for papers and get paid to, and very low level, and make nothing doing this and do it for the fans, and they need to be in the press box so that they can get the access to speak to players to get quotes, speak to the coach to get quotes, be on the press conference, you know, emails and things like that. So the power balance is one way.
Did anything come of it? Did you get reprimanded? Have we gotten any emails?
No, of course not. No, I'm in this weird situation where, you know, NYCFC, as we've discussed on the podcast, NYCFC remains in violation of MLS media policy when it comes to their post-game media access. And that's like, just exists. But at the same time, I have to work in concert with them when it comes to something like this. And they had, you know, they seemed to feel somewhat similarly where it came to like, well, they didn't observe anything. And I had to remind them that they make the rules. They're like, what are the rules exactly? And I told them, like, it's whatever you want, dude. But just a tweet like that makes me look bad because I literally wrote the code of conduct for every reporter in MLS that's under North American Soccer Reporters. Me personally, not me personally, me and seven other people. So, like, just to see that kind of, it was an unfortunate experience, I'll say. You know, that's it. I mean, and lastly, and this is very important, I asked him for a specific example of which reporters were, in his opinion, violating any kind of conduct, you know, so I could speak to them and tell them, hey, do you mind keeping it down? And he pointed out, the only person he pointed out was the only black person in the press box who I was sitting next to, and I swear on my mother's life, did not clap once. And I find that interesting, to say the least.
Hell yeah, dude. Get his ass. Get him canceled.
And frankly, And, but it was very disturbing. I informed that reporter that that's what happened, and they were very disturbed, and rightly so. And that's it. No, but I don't want, I'm not interested in getting anyone canceled, because this person obviously just functions differently than you or I or, you know, any professional in the media world in New York City would. They found it. They thought the best practice would be to call out people on Twitter as opposed to approach them directly. And, you know, that's unfortunate. And it's something I'll keep in mind going forward. It was a good lesson that I can't assume how other people will react to New York, to us being, we laugh, we make jokes, because we care about the sport, you know, and if someone can't handle that, like, okay, we need to find a common ground. This person in particular was not interested in finding a common ground. And that's, you know, his prerogative. And you understand I'm trying to be very professional because I don't want to get to that level.
Yes,
you
for know? Sure.
I don't want to be in a place where I'm being, because it truly is an instance of this person just behaves differently. And that's very shocking in life. You know, in life, when you're like crossing the street, like just today, I had the right of way when I was biking. Someone cut me off. I said, "What the fuck are you doing?" And he honked at me.
Like, and you that's know, just, that's actually a really great. Differently. That's a great analogy, because I think about this all the time about how I have absolute and that it's all a matter of perspective and yada 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 and blah 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 blah. But like when I'm on the bike, everybody else is a moron, and when I'm walking through the road, everybody else is a moron, and when I'm driving a car, everybody else is a moron. You know what I mean? Like it's
yeah.
That is in fact like a consistent position that I take no matter what. Who I'm in relation to, and that like there's a certain amount of that just comes with the territory. You're in hostile territory and people are being annoying and being morons, and the real difference is don't fucking tweet about it, you know what I mean?
That's it, but that's the world we live in, so we have to deal with it.
Yeah, most definitely.
I'm just uncomfortable that he's in a position where a reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, which is a big newspaper and this person's a reputable reporter, responded to that tweet saying that MLS should do something about it, as in inferring that we should lose our credentials over one person's point of view in one tweet, which is not the reality of the situation by far. So that's it. I don't want to talk anymore. That's already way longer than I want to, but I will say this, if you'll allow me.
I'll allow it.
Literally, the world will be so much better without. I will.
Yeah, no, and that's the part. That's the part. That's a lot of bleeps.
Well, that they're in.
Great. That's, good.
I mean, I was saying nothing. I was only giving personal details, which is why I bleeped it. Right, Jake?
That's exactly right. Yeah, you were talking about your home address and the address of your mother. If you want to hear what Trey had to say beyond the bleeps.
No.
Trey, sure. We don't need to talk about... We'll pause daintily on it, but we don't need to get into the whole sort of... This was filler for me. It's interesting. There's an article in like Sports Business Journal or something about all-electric stadiums, which I think is very interesting. Maybe we can touch on it next week. It framed around, you know, New York City FC has the chance to become a vanguard for this kind of shift in how stadiums are built. I think that would be very exciting. But mostly it's an excuse for us to talk about the fact that the city council vote on NYCFC's soccer-specific stadium is this Thursday. It will be happening. We'll get this pot out before then. So you can all wait with your bated breaths in advance, just like we will.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, the team might have sent something to the season ticket holders, too. I'm not sure about, like, some kind of event or celebration about it. I'm not sure, but I know that, yeah, the vote's going to happen on the 11th. These things happen quickly. Like as of last week, when I first got the whispers that it might happen on the 11th, there was no Chris Campbell, of course, being the awesome journalist he is, was like, well, there's no land use meetings about it scheduled beforehand or this other kind of meeting. So it can't be, but they can schedule those quickly. And then as of today of recording, they scheduled them, and Chris was like, okay, so it's happening.
Is this one of those things, is this like Congress, where they're not going to put the bill forward unless they have the votes?
Yeah, no, I from what I've heard, it's would be hard for city council to pass on a deal like this. Like, building building 100% affordable housing with the entire union infrastructure of New York City behind it, and getting rid of chop shops. Like, I think it's pretty much a done deal. We have to have it happen. And more importantly, we need Mayor Adams not to be arrested before April 16th, because the vote will happen within 5 days of it being signed by the city council. I don't know if it's 5 business days, so we might have to hold our breath till the following Friday.
Okay, so if you can send an email to your local federal officer encouraging, you know, late mornings and
restraint,
early happy hours, then all the better. Trey!
So, yeah, that's exciting. That's it.
Are you ready to raw dog a New England precap?
Sure.
Let's do it. You alluded to it earlier. I think the question that's on everybody's mind is, is this going to be the same story as always, where the question of what happens against New England is the question of how many goals can we actually find with a team that's been struggling to put them together?
Yep.
Great. All right. Where do you tweet at? Just kidding.
I mean, almost kidding. There's not much to say. They're a team that has a few good pieces, but has been awful. They're probably the only team worse than us in MLS, frankly, when it comes to dominating other teams or scoring or any of that junk. They got their first win this past weekend against Charlotte 1-0. And so not the most impressive, and we'll just see how it goes. They have Giacomo Vrironi, the Italian, who just kind of, it's hard to say, it might be too early, but I don't think it is to say like he's a flop considering how much they paid for him and that he's a DP, I believe. And he's just not scoring goals. Where have we heard that before? A number 9 not scoring goals. That's the situation they're in. Carlos Gil is obviously a former MVP of this league. He's not playing at that level. He did score this past match, but he's not looking as solid. And him and Sean Kalai, who I think is also a very talented player, but certainly just not gelling with the rest of that team, they're both kind of extremely frustrated. And every match that I've seen of them is mostly just those two guys trying to make something happen. It doesn't happen, and they get mad about it. They have a new coach in Caleb Porter, who we know well, and did not get a new coach bump. He has been off to quite an awful start. Now, for them, I don't think they're going to fire him because they just hired him. So this is a case of, you know, two very experienced but very beleaguered coaches facing each other who have two teams that should have high ceilings but are certainly not living up to them, and both have trouble scoring. The thing is that we at least have a little bit more semblance of defense, goalkeeping, and chance creation. But that's about the only edge we have. Luckily, I do think that should be enough. It's hard to say, but I would say of any game we've had this season, this is the must win, right? This is in the 5-game homestand. We just kind of survived a bunch of difficult games, and now we're going to be at Yankee Stadium. We have to win this. I don't know, see how we can, just for the mentality of the team.
The challenge
to lose to the worst team and the league at home is, I mean, that's a death now.
And yet we'll still be here doing the same shit that we do every week, even if we do lose. The challenge seems to me to be the fact that both teams are going to have this exact same mindset, right? Like, both teams are going to approach this as a must-win for the exact same fucking reasons. Both teams are going to be looking to turn their season around on this match. And that means that there's real capacity for this match to get wired, you know, and for multiple surprising things to happen. It's a little unpredictable, it feels like, you know. This feels like it could be a nil-nil. This feels like it could be a 3-2. It's hard to say. It's hard to guess, because everyone's going to be looking for their breakout. Everyone's going to be looking for the star making moment.
You know what I actually think it might be closer to is a game where we actually do dominate. And this kind of game has happened before. We look at Portland. I think this game will be most similar to Portland, where we do extremely well. We're clicking on all cylinders. We feel the Yankee Stadium vibe. We're playing against a team that's not great. We And we have some momentum from some previous matches, like know that we're getting better. And then the only thing is we have to protect against the brain farts and the mishaps that will let a team like New England get back in. I think it's the most similar to Portland, because I don't know if they have enough in the tank to generate enough to challenge us at a level like Atlanta did. I think it's going to be more of we have to keep ourselves from beating ourselves.
Yeah.
And they, and as you said, the star makers and the Carlos Heels and the Shankalais and the Veronis and the Joneses are going to want to make a statement. So they will capitalize if we do have a brain fart.
So what's your scoreline?
Say 2-0. Let's go Bacarar Brace.
Yeah, get it. I'm ready. I'm going to keep predicting it every week until it comes, you know?
Well, that's the only way you can't be, you'll eventually be right.
Or not.
Or yeah, it's like playing the lottery every day of your life. You'll just always lose.
I'm side with you, Trey. I'll take a 2-0 as well.
Okay.
Where do you tweet at?
Trey Fillmore, what about you?
At Jake Beckhard, and you can find us both at Blue Balls Blue Pod. Shouts to the homie Zane, who put a dollar in the tip jar this week by getting gastropub dinner with me to talk about screenplays and shit. And paid for my drink and my chicken sandwich. If you want to pay for my drink and my chicken sandwich.
Wait, that counts as a donation to the podcast?
It certainly does. Absolutely. It kept my mental health. It got me to where I am today, Trey. I think there's no chance of this episode even coming out on time if it weren't the... And, you know, to be clear, a donation to Trey. If you take Trey out for meals, Trey's doing fine. I'm at death's door here. You know, one bad day could send me into... a spiral from which I never recover. So donations to me count. Yeah. Donations to Trey do not. But donations to the tip jar proper at cash.me/$blueballs or just search Blue Balls NYCFC in your Cash app certainly count and help us keep the lights on every week. Zane asked if people do donate in the tip jar, and the answer is, for all intents and purposes on this podcast, yes, and so should you. But people have been buying merch instead, and people do buy merch as well, so get on there and join the crowd. You know, you don't want to be the only one without a cool NYCFC sleeveless tee this summer. You might as well stock up right now. They're waiting for you. They're shaking with excitement at the proposition that you might take one home, have it shipped directly to your door. And, yeah, it's a great, you know, keep helping us out, and we'll keep helping you out with cutting-edge soccer analysis week after week. We will see you on the other side of New England. Thanks so much for listening, as always. See you then. Bye.
Bye.
Good harmony.